I have been crying out to God in my own heart as we're going through the service, praying that He might give us a sense of His own divine presence. And I feel like those two on the road to Emmaus, that my heart is burning within me as I sense His very own dear presence, for which we're so unworthy. I'm going to ask you to take your Bibles this morning and turn to Job. Job chapter 1, as we yield to the day and confine ourselves to Father's Day. You will recall that a little over a month ago we had Mother's Day. During that time the fathers could go to sleep. Now it's Father's Day and now it's the mother's turn. No, I do not mean that. Because a family consists of people, not one person. Whether it's a single parent or otherwise, it consists of people. And like many of you, I can speak this morning with a deep sense of conviction, not because I'm a model father, but because I come from a background where I did not have such a father, where my home was broken up very early, and through a single mother, I am what I am, of course, below the grace of God, what He has made me. I know that not every one of us has experienced a good experience with our fathers. I never speak on Father's Day or Mother's Day for that matter, but on Father's Day without remembering the story that I heard some time ago about a Salvation Army officer, who was speaking with a lad that was in trouble. And as he spoke to this lad, wanting to get across to him the idea of a father, he said to him, "Son, God is like a father." And he tightened his lips and he looked with a grimaced face at this Salvation Army officer and he said to him, "Sir, if God is like my old man, I hate him." It is true that some of us have experienced tremendous negative experiences in our past. We have been affected by experiences with those that are called fathers, that we do not like to think of it. However, my friends, the Bible does speak, the Bible does give to us information, instruction concerning the life and the model of a father. And Job was one of those. Job was one of those. There are those who try to contend that Job was a mythical figure, that he was actually a representation, a type of a person, but not a real person. I disagree with that for many, many reasons. Ezekiel speaks of Job as a person. The Lord Jesus speaks of Job as a person. And James speaks of Job as a person. And I believe the Bible does as well. When we think of Job, we usually think of this man who was a man of patience. A man who was able to endure extreme difficulties without giving up, without going under. Yet, you've got to investigate this man's life to understand that he was more than a patient person. Job was a father. And I will suggest to you, ladies and gentlemen, and especially to us as fathers, that if you want to know what a man really is like, know that man in his home. A man that has affected me deeply in my life, he's now in heaven, is the late Harold Wildish. And one day someone asked Harold Wildish, "Mr. Wildish, are you a Christian?" And in his own inimitable way, with that beautiful British accent and his little buck teeth, and his receding hairline, and with a gentle, godly smile, he looked into the face of the questioner and said, "If you want to know if I'm a Christian, ask Mrs. Wildish." My friends, if you want to know if I'm a Christian, ask Mrs. Thurton. Ask Heather Thurton. Ask Christopher Thurton. ask my neighbors, ask my father-in-law, ask my mother-in-law, ask the person who is closest to me, who can see me when no one else can see me, who can see me when I am under pressure. Then you will know whether I'm a Christian or not. Job chapter 1. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. And that man in the King James was perfect. What a threatening description of this man. He was perfect. It's a good thing that we have been given the privilege of studying, or we would be in great problems if that text ended there. Job was perfect. Let me ask you, children, do you know a perfect father? Let me ask you, wives, do you know a perfect husband? Some time ago, I called a home and I said to the wife, is your good husband at home? And she said, my husband is at home. No, the word means, my friends, that Job was blameless. I saw a sign, a bumper sticker in a car some time ago. Christians are saved, not perfect. Love that. But we want to examine briefly the life of Job this morning so that we as fathers might grasp onto some truths that will help us to make an impact, because, my friends, fatherhood is in trouble. Fathers are in desperate need. If God looked for a man in the days of Ezekiel, he's looking for a father in our day. What do we find out about this man? Let's examine, first of all, his personal life. Alexander McLaren, that great British preacher of another age, said this: we are, by what men know us to be, reputable. In other words, our reputation is what men outside of the home conceive us to be. But we are what we really are, and that is our character. Our reputation is what people perceive us to be. Our character is what we really are. Let's investigate that in the life of Job. And in this life, we see, first of all, spiritual integrity. Spiritual integrity. Integrity means, my friend, someone who can be trusted beyond the facade, the externals. Someone who is real. And there are two things I see about Job's spiritual integrity. First of all, he was a man of extreme sincerity. Now, don't let that word fool you. Because a sincere person, my friends, is someone without wax. Someone who is real. Someone who doesn't put on a front. A sincere person is someone who has been actually made into what he claims to be. He goes beyond words. He goes beyond what people know about him. He is true to himself. He's true to what he knows. And this is what we find about Job. He was a man of extreme sincerity. In other words, my friends, he had a personality that had been molded by the truth he had come to know. He took God seriously. He was affected by the truth. He was subject to the truth. He actually brought his life to bear under what God had revealed to him. Therefore, my friends, because Job was that kind of a man, it is said that the man was, first of all, perfect and upright. He was straight. He didn't cut corners. Job never actually adjusted the truth to suit the occasion he found himself in. My favorite story, and you've heard me saying this so many times, is the minister who was caught speeding. And when he got a ticket, he said, but at least I got a chance to witness to the police. Now, which police in his right mind would want a witnessing pastor telling him, I'm a Christian? I'd hide my face. Job, my friends, did not cut the corners. He was straight. He was a balanced man. His life was absolutely blameless before those who know him and before God. Not because he was perfect. The Bible, by the way, does not teach sinless perfection for any human being. But it does teach, my friends, obedience that causes a person to actually cause others to observe him and say, this is a holy man of God that passes by us continually. Job was a sincere man. He didn't toy with the truth. He didn't traffic in untried truth. How often, my friends, we have heard children saying of their parents, they can speak the language, but the lifestyle is absent. His character was true to his knowledge. He lived up to known truth. Therefore, the man was said to be perfect or to be blameless. Time would not allow us to go into all that that means. But look at his consistency. Not only was he a man of extreme sincerity, he was a man of consistency. Look at what our text says. Job was a father who, fearing God, turned away from evil. The reason we sang that song number 400 this morning is because I heard the story of a man who was traveling. He was a traveling salesman. And he was actually accosted by a prostitute. He's a Christian man. And he was away from home. He had been traveling for weeks. And this prostitute said to him, would you like to have a good time? And I'm sorry to say, he was tempted. But the song started to go through his mind. I would be true, for there are those who trust me. I have left a wife at home. I've left my children at home. They trust me. But my friends, if I were to respond to that, that's what I want to say in my own life, but something more. I would be true, for there is a God observing me. Here was a man who feared God, and he turned from evil. He didn't turn from evil and fear God. That's impossible. But he feared God. God was the standard by which he lived. God was the standard by which he responded to moral evil. He feared God first. The same principle is given in 1 Thessalonians chapter 1. How they turned to God and they stopped serving idols. If we want to learn the truth, my friends, of how to overcome, how to turn from evil, the King James word is a very interesting word. He eschewed evil. Eschewed. I love that. You almost spit people saying that. Eschewed. You know what it means? It means, my friends, that Job, when he was confronted with evil, did not supply anything to feed it. He didn't supply his flesh with anything to accommodate evil. He turned. He never completed the thought. No lustful thought was ever completed in his life. He turned from it. Someone can say, is that possible? Yes, my friends, let me give you a very, very homey illustration. We can never stop the birds from flying over our heads, but we can stop them from building their nest. Is it possible not to complete the thought? Yes, it is. Romans 13 and 14, put on the Lord Jesus and make no provision for the flesh. Job turned, he withdrew from it. Fun. I don't make fun with this at all. I shall never forget some time ago, I was visiting Clark Institute down at College Street. I had an appointment there one night, and I'd never been there before, and as I walked into the institute, I didn't know what to expect. I looked somewhat lost, and a lady walked up to me, and she said, are you a doctor? I said, no, I'm a minister. Oh, a minister. Can I talk with you? It's interesting. Whenever you go to those places, for me anyway, I've been mistaken for doctors so many times that I could almost pass for one. Can I talk with you? I said, sure you can. I have some time. And I looked at my watch. I said, I have a few minutes. And she said, she sat beside me. And she said, do you know why I'm in here? I said, no, I don't know why you're in here. Would you like to tell me why you're in here? She said, yes. She said, and I'm quoting, friends. She said, I cheated on my husband because I just can't resist men. You have never seen me run so fast. Literally. I mean that, friends. I said, feet, do your stuff. I was not going to let her trap me. My friends, the scripture says the heart is deceitful and desperately wicked, and the most godly man today can fall tomorrow if he doesn't stand before God. Job was a father of spiritual integrity. He was sincere with his faith. He was consistent with it. He feared God and never allowed lust to be completed in his life. But Job was not only a man of sincerity, spiritual integrity, he was a man of social integrity. Social integrity. Look at verses 2 and 4. 7 sons, 3 daughters were born to him. And his sons used to go and hold feasts in the house of each on his day. Scholars differ on this. Some say it's just the day they had. Others, it was their birthday. I tend to believe it was their birthday. But there's something unique about this. 2 great truths we learned about Job as a father. That as a father, he was a parental success. Look at it, friends. His children spoke to one another after they were grown up. His children communicated with one another after they were adults. They shared, they communed, they communicated. This is a key to what kind of a man Job was. His children watched him as he communicated with Mrs. Job. His children watched him as he was able to share deep secrets with his wife, and they learned it after they left home. This is important. Because, my friends, our children will mimic outside what they learn inside. And when these boys were old and when the girls were old, they were still talking to one another in a very intimate way. Parental success. I tell you, as a minister, I've spoken with many, many people. As I travel, as I talk, where I was before, where brothers do not talk to sisters and sisters don't talk to brother. And the worst part of it all is when the parents die and they begin to fight over the will. In one sense, I'm glad I don't have to worry about that one. But can you imagine? Here, my friends, is a man who, because he was consistent in his home, because he communicated with his children, communicated with his wife, he was able to pass that virtue on to his children. And when they were old and celebrating, the brothers would not think of celebrating without inviting the sisters. Parental success. But there was something else about this man, was professional success. Professional success. Look at verse 3. His possessions were 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 5 yoke of oxen, 500 female donkeys, very many servants. And that man increased above all the other men in the east. That's what it means to be greatest. He increased both in his character, in his conduct, in his business. And I want you to keep in mind, my friends, how busy this man was. He had a business to take care of, and just keep that in mind. And so we see his social integrity and his parental success and his professional success. But I want you to go, secondly, to a father's prayer life. A father's prayer life. Look at verse 5. And it came about when the days of feasting had completed their cycle, that Job would send and consecrate or sanctify his children, all of them, brothers and sisters, rising up early in the morning, offering burnt offering according to the number of them, for all 10 of them. For Job said, perhaps my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. But he still had a spiritual relationship with them, a spiritual responsibility to them, and he was going to exercise and execute that no matter how old they got. He stood before God early in the morning. Why early in the morning? Because he was busy in the rest of the day. He was a businessman. He had responsibilities. He had to take care of those 7,000 sheep and those 3,000 camels. He had to deal with interpersonal relationships with those who were working for him. He realized that his day was full, but my friends, he rose early in the morning because that was the only time he could. He didn't have time the rest of the time, so he took time early in the morning. And fathers, I ask you this. Are you a priest to your children? Do they know that at a certain hour, in spite of the fact that they might be old and married now and have their own children, that at a certain time, Father is interceding on their behalf because he is a priest to his children, no matter how long they live? What a father. Several years ago, there was a lady up here in Unionville. I knew little of Unionville at that time. She sold me a beautiful, beautiful, untainted 65 Chevy 2 for $500. It was immaculate. And she was a dear Christian lady. Mrs. Roberts was her name. And she got to know me. And we became real partners. And I would make it my responsibility to call her once a week just to see how she was doing. And inevitably, I do not remember a time that I called that she did not say, Winston, today I was praying for you. Today I was praying for you. Today I was praying for you. She's up in glory now. But what a privilege to know that as I face life, there are those who are being a priest on my behalf. There's a father at home. There's a mother at home. And they are standing between me and that ugly, pressing world with all its evils pressing in upon me. And they're saying, oh God, preserve my son. Preserve my daughter. Keep them from the evil one. I set myself apart so that they might be set apart to you today. He was a priest to his children. But I wanted to see, secondly, my friends, his perception of his children. And this comes home to me so strongly these days. He said, perhaps my children, the word sin is an unfortunate word. The King James has cursed. But the word is, perhaps they have forgotten God as they have been exercising enjoying their birthdays. Perhaps they have forgotten God. They have put him aside for the time being. What was Job doing? Job was telling us something, my friends. He is 6 pounds, 7 ounces. He is a blend of a white mother and a black father. He's perfect. Tan, like you wouldn't believe it. He has everything going for him. Looks, I took my mother to the airport yesterday, and these airplane people standing and watching the child. Oh, isn't he beautiful? And oh, my word, I send my clothes to the cleaners tomorrow so they can put the buttons back on. But my friends, I'm going to tell you, Christopher Matthew David is born in sin. He has the capacity to turn from everything that father and mother will ever give to him. And Job, knowing the possibility of a child moving in the direction that's opposite to God grows early in the morning. You may turn from God, but you will never turn away from my prayers. I understand human nature. Perhaps in their hearts, they have turned from God. Oh, my friends, never make the mistake by thinking that your son and your daughters can never do it. They can. When I was a young man, used to be, oh no, not that child. Somebody else says, but not Winston. Oh, well, Winston, yes, they always said yes to him, but it was another story with others. They can. Every child born into the world, Psalm 58, verse 3, the wicked are estranged from the womb. They go about speaking lies as soon as they be born. I'm going to tell you, friends, these 2 months, 2.5 months, I'm only waiting for 3 months to come. I'll see if he's going to change. Oh, he gets so angry. I mean, angry. And he opens his mouth. And he does not stop until he gets what he wants. Well, let me tell you, God has provided 2 nice lumps in a nice place to deal with that. It is true, friends. Listen to the scriptures. If you love your child, you will discipline them. And discipline doesn't mean to be cruel to your child. It means to train them up to provide for them an atmosphere in which you will break their will by preserving their spirits. Perhaps they have forgotten God. Job perceived his children not in kind of a starry-eyed parent kind of attitude, but with all the possibilities. But then there's not only the priest to his children, the perception of his children. There's thirdly what I call the partnership with his children. The partnership. Thus did Job continually. It didn't stop when they became adults. Oh, my friends, how many times I've heard children, in fact, in counseling people, one of the things I say to them when they're getting married, are you getting married because you want to get out of your home? I want to go. I don't want to be there any longer. That's one of the questions I ask every couple. I tell them, there are different reasons for people getting married. Because you see, sometimes fathers and children do not become friends after they leave home. They're just acquaintances. But Job was able to communicate with his children after they had all been adults. A priest to his children, he stood before God on their behalf. He made time for it. The perception of his children, he knew their possibilities. And he was partners with his children. He had a spiritual responsibility long beyond their adult years. And lastly, a father's pressured life. A father's pressured life. Job faced pressures in his life as a father. But look, friends, how he dealt with them. When Job faced the pressure of loss and grief, he was sustained by his faith. He authenticated his faith in the midst of pressure. The word came, your son had been killed. Your son had been killed 7 times. Your daughters had been killed. Your daughters had been killed 3 times, and they were wiped out. And Job, as a father, having stood before God for his children, still had to go through the process of grief because of catastrophe in his children's lives. But he was sustained by his faith. Look at how he handled it in 1:20. Job arose and tore his clothes, shaved his head, fell to the ground, and worshipped. He brought God into the griefs of life. He brought God into the pressures of life. He faced the pressures of life by looking unto God. And he was realistic. He said, when I came into this world, I was nude. I came with nothing. And the only thing I came with was with the possibility of knowing God. And now that I know God, I am left with everything. Everything has been taken away from me. I'm left with only one thing. And it's the one thing that really matters. I know God. I know God. I know God. He was sustained. You see, friends, real character is produced under pressure. I want my daughter later on to say, I saw how daddy behaved when things weren't going well. I want my daughter to love her church and not to see her father criticizing members if they criticize her father. I want my daughter to remember how my faith sustained me so that when she's an adult and she comes against grief, she will be able to look back and draw from her father's experience. He stood before God and I want to stand before God. He was sustained. Ah, fathers are many. Leadership fathers are few. I grieved some time ago when I heard of a young man in Toronto. When his little child was screaming and crying, he took that child and bashed his head against the wall. Can't handle the pressure. Sustained by his faith. But my friends, in closing, not only this father's pressured life was sustained by his faith, but I want you to see in chapter 2, verses 9 and 10, that a father under pressure is a security for his family. A father under pressure, a family under pressure, can find security in a dad. Look, if you please, in 2, 9 and 10. Then his wife said to him, do you still hold fast to your integrity? As I studied this, I felt a sense of grief in my own heart. Why? Because I said to myself, can my wife say this to me? You are a man of integrity. That's what Mrs. Job was saying. I have watched you. You heard how the children had been killed. You heard how the servants had been taken. And I have observed you and your integrity is intact. Are you still going to hold on to that? She was beginning to actually crack up under the pressure. She was beginning to find herself disintegrating emotionally. She had no children upon whom she could lean. But my friend Job said, here is my shoulder. Here are my arms. Listen to how he responded. You are speaking unfortunately. You are not using the mind that God has given. You see, she was responding emotionally to the situation. Job said, you can't, you can't, you can't. Don't speak foolishly. Don't lose your sense of perspective. Here was a father who was a leader in his family when the family was under pressure. Close with a story of George Yeager. One day he took his father and his three sons on a fishing trip. And as he took his three sons on a fishing trip, along with his father, the engine stalled. They could not get the engine to start again. And this is a true story, by the way. The water started to come into the boat. The boat started to sink. And so George tied a rope to himself with the life savers, the thing they use to float. And he tied himself, tied his three sons and his father, and they started to swim for shore. George was in front, swimming, swimming, swimming. And as he was swimming, something told him there is less pressure from the back, more pressure from the back. I'm using more energy up at front. He looked back, and there was only one person swimming. Father had died, drinking too much water. His two sons had died, drinking too much water. And the last boy, Clifford, the youngest of all, As George looked back in the 6-foot waves coming over him, George said, "I heard Clifford saying, I had rather die and be with Jesus than to keep struggling any longer." And he gulped his last amount of water. He was helpless. 8 hours later, he landed on shore. The news reporter men standing all around with their mics and their stupid questions. "How do you feel?" And George Jaeger said, "I had always taught my children never to fear death, because as a Christian, death is the entrance into being with Jesus. And when I look back and I heard Clifford saying, I had rather be with Jesus, I knew that the battle had been won. Because under pressure, he remembered what Dad taught him." My friends, our world is in desperate need of fathers who are leaders, spiritual leaders in their home, sincere fathers who take God seriously, fathers who are transparent, but fathers who so instruct their children that when they're under pressure out there, they will remember what Dad said and what Dad did and say, "I'd rather be with Jesus under any circumstance. I'd rather have Jesus than silver and gold, because that's what Dad always said and believed." Fathers under pressure will prove the quality of fathers we are. May God be pleased to make us like George Jaeger, and prepare our children for life or death.